You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're now on episode 10. And we're looking at the question, hasn't science ruled Christianity out? This is an interesting question, Jamie, because although I hear it a lot, as far as like from my skeptical friends and secular friends, I hear this question about science ruling Christianity out. I also think it's one that doesn't really follow from either logic or the evidence. But it's worth looking at because it is a very popular, kind of a well-entrenched belief in our secular culture, and I think that especially if you're at a university or a college campus right now, this is almost, even if it's not explicitly taught in all the classes, in a lot of the classes, it's almost just assumed that Christianity kind of had its heyday back many years ago, and with the progress of science and the development in our technology and whatnot, we've learned more about the world and we know more about how things work in the physical sciences that we actually don't need to posit God anymore, because really God was only there in the first place to make sense of things like lightning and thunder and why we have droughts and hurricanes and disasters and things of that nature. But I want to say from the beginning that I think that the presupposition that God was only there in people's mindsets from the beginning to sort of plug those gaps is a very fallacious understanding. And I think what people will today call the God of the gaps argument is essentially when people say, we can't explain this phenomena we see in nature, therefore we're just going to say God did it, or, you know, insert miracle here. I've seen the joke or the cartoon strip where the scientists are trying to work out this event that they've witnessed and they've seen in the laboratory. And since they can't explain it, they just say, insert miracle here, and then the formula works out. And while I think that there probably are some Christians and maybe others who are theists who posit God to just make sense of things they don't understand in the scientific world, that is, in the natural world, I think that more often than not, that's just a caricature, and that people don't really think when we think about things like events happening in nature that we just don't understand, we're just going to say, oh, that's a miracle that's happening. So, and I don't know, Jamie, as far as from your perspective, do you hear this from your friends who you speak to about the faith?
I haven't really too often heard this kind of approach. Every once in a while, I will see people argue for the reality of errors in the gospel based on scientific knowledge. But in terms of arguing outright that science disproves the Bible, no, I haven't really run into that. I think mainly, you know, one of the first rules of science is that science doesn't prove anything. It's a process of seeking to disprove what's been presented. And part of that is, you know, if we can't repeat the process or if we can't recreate the same reality that was claimed to be true, then obviously that kills that hypothesis. But no, I haven't really, on a major scale, really run into this too much. There are some who, you know, argue God doesn't exist. There are definitely lots of people who argue that the Bible is flawed, but I haven't really run into this particular argument very much.
Let me just give a couple quotes that I think, even though these are written by trans scientists, physicists actually, I think that these two atheistic scientists give kind of a good representative of this view, good representation of this view. The first one I've got is Steven Weinberg. He's a physics Nobel Prize winner. He said, "The world needs to wake up from the long nightmare of religion. Anything we scientists can do to weaken the hold of religion should be done and may, in fact, be our greatest contribution to civilization." Okay, so that may sound extreme, but if you think about, this is a premier scientist saying, yeah, religion is a useless superstition, essentially. And he goes on to say it's really has no value anymore because it was there to begin with just to make us feel better about ourselves and to help us when we're feeling lonely and that type of thing. But now we have these scientific explanations which basically say we don't have a need for God anymore. I think that part of the issue that's happening when people are thinking in this way is that they're overstepping the bounds for which science is designed. In other words, science does tell us a lot about the natural world. When we use the scientific method, when we do experimentation, observation, we are learning about how the natural world works in many ways, but that doesn't mean that we're getting a full explanation for the cause of those events or the cause of those laws of nature that we talk about. For instance, if I was to tell you that Isaac Newton, when he had that incredible discovery where he was able to describe gravity and lay out this law of gravity, this inverse law of gravitation, and at that point, if I told you that he didn't actually explain gravity, that would surprise some people. That would be met by some objections because people would say, "Of course he explained gravity. He gave us the law of gravitation. It's all laid out right there." But in reality, he didn't explain gravity at all. He just explained what we observe. So the laws of nature don't cause anything. They just give a description to what we observe in nature. And I think guys like John Lennox do a really good job pointing this out, that we're not in any way explaining things in terms of identifying the cause or the origin by giving this a label of a law, a scientific law. So that's true of law of gravity, law of the laws of thermodynamics, laws of entropy, things like that. We're describing what we see in nature, but we're in no way explaining how those laws came about to begin with, or how the materials in nature came about. And that's why it's so key to look at what Christianity actually says, because the reality is, and Jamie, I know you've done a lot of research in history, so you're, I'm sure, aware of this, but the scientific revolution that brought about the scientific advancements that we have today was actually, in large measure, it was started by theists, and most of them were Christian theists. So, for example, we got guys like Michael Faraday. He believed very strongly in the scientific method, and he was a Christian believer. And the way he looked at it is, if I'm going to do a study of nature, I want to know that there are regularities and laws, so that I can actually observe things and do measurements and know that nature is going to be regular or going to be consistent over different experimentations and observations. So that's the scientific method. But in order for those laws and regularities to be in nature in the first place, he said you have to have God, because only God gives a philosophical basis for those regularities. You need as C.S. Lewis said, you need a lawgiver to explain all the laws that we observe. And I don't know, Jamie, do you want to comment on this? Because I know you've done plenty of research in history, so you're probably aware of this. But scientific revolution.
Yeah, I obviously would agree with you and argue that Christians or those following Christ have made most of the substantial advancements in every field of study, not just science, but that's been a common reality. But we began with the question, does science disprove the Bible? Well, if we're talking about God, that's kind of a whole different topic altogether. But science, in my mind, doesn't disprove even God. It doesn't disprove God at all. In fact, I think it further reinforces the reality of God. For example, the more we look at complex design in everything, and the order that the universe is in, it becomes harder and harder to believe that all of that came about by accident. So this idea that the more we learn about science, the more it disproves the reality of God. And in fact, some of the scientific advancements that have come about that have been used to argue for evolution. One of them is the Doppler theory, this idea that light waves get wider as they move further out. And so if you reverse that, it leads back to a single point, right? And that single point is described by those folks to be, well, that's the Big Bang, you know, that was the moment or whatever. It's just as easy to say that was the point in which God said, let there be light, in that moment of creation. And so it's like, no, science doesn't disprove the reality even of God. In fact, we've talked about this before on other episodes, but the reality is it's actually harder. It requires more faith to believe that nothing collided with nothing and created all matter. And in fact, that's an experiment that science has never been able to repeat. This idea that from nothing, nothing can come about. And, you know, so their solution to that is to say, well, it wasn't exactly nothing, right? There was sort of something and then sort of something. Now, granted, those aren't the terms they use. I mean, I'm not a big science, or I don't know a lot about science, so it's not like I have all the terms and stuff. But that's basically the idea of it. And so it's like, is it easier to believe that nothing and nothing created all things that with such complexity and order and design? Or is it easier to believe that a creator created all things, and that creator is revealed to us in the Word of God? So then all they really have in my mind to look to in scripture and say, there's evidence of the Bible disagreeing with science, is they go to figures of speech and point to that and say, see, look, there it is. One of those examples is in like Revelations 7:1, where there's four angels on the four corners of the earth holding back the four winds. And they say, see, there's proof, because obviously we know that the world is a sphere. It's not square. There aren't corners, right? And yet the reality is that's not a scientific statement. What it is a statement to help us understand what's happening. It's a picture of what's happening. What's happening? Well, there's four angels from the four different directions, north, south, east, west, and and so we understand what's happening there. It's not like that's trying to be scientific. It's just trying to help us understand what's going on. And we use figures of speech like that all the time that are not scientific at all and aren't intended to be scientific. And yet everybody understands what's happening. For example, we say, oh, that candle is burning. Well, no, it's not. It's actually combusting, or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. We all understand exactly what we mean by what we're saying. And that's the same thing that's happening there. I don't think you can make the case from history. I don't think you can make the case from science. And I don't think the Bible speaks to, in every respect, not every figure of speech is a direct scientific statement. When it is, though, it has actually countered the truth of or what science believed. An example of that is like in Leviticus 17:11, we're told that the life is in the blood. And if you look through the history of science, we've had a lot of different views about blood. And in fact, the leading view for several hundred years was that infections existed in the blood, and the way to solve that was to bleed people out. And that's what they did for a couple hundred years. And in fact, we know now that a number of people in history were killed as a result of that. By draining out their blood, they either died directly, or draining out their blood, they were too weak. Their body was too weak to fight the infection, and the result was their death. I know George Washington is like that. They believe that he didn't die from the pneumonia. He actually died from being bled out.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think there are, like you said, genuine statements in Scripture that have, if nothing else, real scientific implications. The Leviticus 17 example is perfect because, yeah, we if we had taken that seriously, we would have understood that when you're draining out the blood out of someone, you're bringing on essentially you're draining the life out of them because the life of the flesh is in the blood. And I think there's lots of examples like what you said where it's not meant to be a literalistic picture of how the universe is structured. Like when in Psalms it says, you know, the earth is fixed, and things, it talks about like the pillars of the earth and things like that. But those are metaphors intended to describe the stability of nature and the really the regularity that we do see in nature, that we can count on the sun rising and the sun setting every day. You know, that's something we can be confident of because of this regularity we see in nature. And, you know, I just now spoke in a phenomenological way, and then I said the sun rising, the sun setting. And obviously, I don't believe that the sun is the one moving around the earth. We know that the earth is rotating around the sun, but that, or I should say revolving around the sun, but that does give us an example of how even today we speak in this phenomenological way, and we're not trying to make a scientific technical statement when we say that. And a lot of times, if you're just reading Scripture in that sense of, okay, this has to be a scientific textbook, it's going to give me the exact answer in the modern 21st century mode, then yeah, you're going to be able to poke holes in Scripture in that way, but it was never intended to be read that way.
Well, and that's important. And we get this in regular communication, right? Like, if you and I are hanging out on your back porch late one summer evening, and I look up in the sky and I'm like, oh man, look at how bright the moon is tonight. It's putting off so much light. You wouldn't be like, dude, Jamie, the moon doesn't have any light. Like, it reflects the sun, but it has no light of its own. Like, it's not actually putting out. Well, yeah, you don't do that. Why? Because you understand what I'm saying. I'm saying, hey, look, we can see the moon really well tonight. It's not a statement of science. It's a statement of just, you know, observation or conversational realities. And it's contextual as well. How do we know Leviticus 17 is serious versus Revelation 7 in terms of whether this is a scientific statement or not? It's directly associated to the context and even to the genre of the literature.
Right. And I mean, this brings up something just because you mentioned the moon. So I mentioned before that really when people are saying that, you know, they're accusing Christians of this God of the gaps argument, what I think is behind that is this idea that if we've explained certain phenomena in nature, like say we have laid out in terms of physics and meteorology and weather patterns, we've laid out what causes lightning. Okay, that explains the how in the natural realm, but that does not explain the origin of all those systems in the first place. And so here's an analogy. People used to, since you mentioned the moon, people used to believe that the position of the moon could actually cause madness. And so literally the reason we have this word lunacy is because that's related to the word lunar. And people believe this, that it was the position of the moon that was causing this. Okay, but when they realized there were other factors at play and that the moon wasn't the cause of lunacy, they didn't suddenly say, okay, now we have no need for the moon. We can just reject the idea that the moon exists. They had gotten a wrong explanation for how those two are connected, obviously, but the moon does still have a huge impact on life on Earth. It causes tides. It is involved with rotation of the Earth and things of that nature. So to say that we've understood how a system works in nature in no way explains the origin, the cause. It would be a little bit like someone saying, okay, I figured out how this program in Microsoft works, like Microsoft Word. I understand this completely. I've gone through all the data, looked at all the bits of code, and I totally understand this. And then saying, okay, therefore, there's no need to posit a Bill Gates. And we would all look at that and be like, what are you talking about? He's the guy who authored the program. Microsoft has its origin in Bill Gates. And if anything, when you're studying how Microsoft Word functions, you're learning more about him and his mind because it's his creative genius that helped bring it about. And that's just a simple analogy, but that kind of gives us an understanding of where the early scientists in the scientific revolution who were theists, how they understood it was, we're not explaining away God in any way. We're simply figuring out how God did it. And we're understanding more of his mind. And as some scientists have said, we're thinking God's thoughts after him when we study nature. And I think that's important because that's gives a whole new perspective to the scientific endeavor. And really, I think it is a much more fulfilling approach to science. If you're thinking about it as the scientific method is a naturalistic or inherently atheistic endeavor, then I mean how depressing, in my mind that takes so much of the joy and the thrill of it, because you're not coming at it as I'm learning about how the creator did it. You're just wondering, how did this chaos bring about order? Which really, that we never see that happening in nature, where order and complexity suddenly arises out of chaos. But that is what you are left with if you take a naturalistic or atheistic perspective.
Well, and for me, I think I would be more inclined to believe in the evolutionary idea if the order wasn't complex. You know what I mean? If it was like a simple, if like everything was just so simple, the order was just so simple, it was like, well, maybe somehow this could have just happened. You know, all these things could have just come together and the result was creation. And it's a simple, simple thing. It's like, okay, well, maybe in that context, that could actually happen, right? But the more I look at even the simplest things, or the more I hear explained stuff from really smart people, from scientists of every stripe, they start explaining stuff that has been discovered, that they have learned, that they are, you know, working on, that they see in creation, that they, I mean, even like I've heard scientists explain how the bumblebee, based on all of its complex order and proportion and all these sort of things, at the end of the day, like even though it's complex and all this stuff, the bumblebee shouldn't fly. I mean, I've actually heard people argue that out just based on the pure physics of it all. It shouldn't be able to fly, and yet it does, and it does really well. Just, you know, speaks back to that reality. Just there's just this massively complexity to all design, and we just see it over and over and over again. No matter where you look, there's just super complex design. And so it seems to me that it requires more faith to believe that great complexity and order came about as a result of nothing, no God, no matter, nothing than it does to believe that there was a creator who created all things and then revealed himself to creation. And so it's like, yeah, for me, it's completely the opposite. The more I learn about science, the more I'm convinced of the truth of our creator, and we see him revealed in this massively complex creation. But you can even step away from what we'd say the hard science into the soft science, and deal with the reality of natural law. I don't know if you would call it that way. I mean, I would call it the law, you know, God's law or the law of God. But we see this reality where there are definite understandings in a sociological context that people have all over the world, even though many of these people groups have not even interacted or talked to each other. And yet they still hold to these values that we would see as a product of God as creator. And so you have that shade as well. So it's just like, no matter how you look, and we've talked about this before, it's just like, no matter how you look or where you look, the truth of God seems to be more revealed, unless you are going at it from a perspective of, I refuse to believe, and I'm looking for reason not to believe. And that's where we get these ridiculous arguments like taking figures of speech out of context and pretending like we don't even understand that.
Yeah, well, and so we've been talking about how science actually supports Christianity. It does not rule it out. But I want to even take it a little, I want to take it a step further. I want to say that apart from God's existence, and really this is going to be the Christian God I'm talking about, apart from his existence, science is not even possible. To do science, it's not even possible. And here's what I mean. So Albert Einstein said, the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it is comprehensible. And what Einstein was saying is that if you look at the evolutionary theory about how we came about, according to that scientific theory, it would suggest that there was an unguided, purposeless, random process that brought about every creature that has existed, which means that every creature leading up to us was undirected, and that would mean that the brains that we use and we think with are the result of purposeless, mindless, random processes. And so the question becomes, why would we ever trust that our brains, the result of random processes, why would we ever trust that they can come at the truth? And really, when you think about the scientific endeavor, the whole point, the overarching purpose of science, is to get at the truth about nature. And if, according to Darwinism, we're wired, so to speak, for survival, not for truth, then why would we rely on them? And I mean, this is such a it's such a stark argument that I think that most people haven't even thought about this, because we just take for granted the fact that we can use our minds and that we can process nature. But just think about the fact that we are able to do math and physics and all these different disciplines and apply theories and equations that actually work out. They can actually describe what is going on in the universe, and we can make sense of it. But how would that ever be possible? This is worth considering. How would that ever be possible if, in fact, this universe is the result of an explosion, an undirected chaotic explosion? And I mean, I think this is such a surprising, really, it's a defeater for any idea that we are the result of this long undirected process. That even Charles Darwin, he said that he horrid doubt. He talks about, and really, I think this kind of sums it up. His quote is, he said, "With me, the horrid doubt always arises whether the convictions of man's mind, which has been developed from the mind of the lower animals, are of any value or at all trustworthy." And I think what Darwin is saying is, and as many others have elaborated on, if when we look at our brains, all we're really looking at is these electrochemical processes and these, you know, these synapse firing, then really if you break it down, you can reduce it to all these chemical processes, but in no way can you ever make the case that they are grasping the truth. And it's like, I know Doug Wilson is a Christian apologist who has said, it's like expecting the carbonation when you open up a pop can and expecting that carbonation to have meaning and thought processes. You know, that may sound like a stretch, but when you really break it down, what's going on in the brain is chemical processes. It's very similar in the purely physical sense to what's happening when you open up a can of pop. And to think that that would result in rational, cognitive thought that actually can understand the universe around us is, I think, amazing that people actually could believe that. But really what I think happens is people haven't thought this through. And so what happens is the same theory, Darwinism, that says that we are the result of unguided processes that didn't have us in mind, undercuts itself for those who would want to look at the universe from a Darwinian perspective and try to understand the truth about our origins and how things came to be. It actually cuts the limb off that it's sitting on, because it's saying, but if they are the result of chemical processes that didn't have us in mind, then that should get our attention, that we should think, okay, this is not adding up.
Yeah, I also think it's worth noting that at the end of the day, if we prove, let's say, that all of that is true, that Darwin was right, that evolution is real, that there is no God, that all of this was an accident or came about as a result of random chance, and order and complexity and design all came about because of, well, there's no reason. At the end of the day, what are you left with? It's void of hope. It's void of purpose. It's void of any reason for existing at all other than just because. And what a terrible reality. What a terrible way to live and believe. Instead, on the other side, we have the reality of a God who has eternally existed in his Trinitarian nature as Father, Son, and Spirit, a God who created out of the overflow of his love and life-giving nature, that created man and woman in the image of God, that created all of the beauty and complexity and design that we see in creation, in animals, in the elemental the elements that are all around us that we see all the time. All of that came about as a result of God. And it gives us value as people being made in the image of God. It gives us purpose, and it gives us the assurance of the presence of God. And the result is then hope. Because of course we believe that all creation exists because, not just because God created, but because God actively sustains it. The point is, one leads to abundant life and the other leads to nothing.
Yeah, and also I just want to add that the Bible itself is a very pro-science book in the sense that, so I just, you know, earlier was saying the Darwinian theory really gives us no basis for actually doing science, but it's the very opposite. As you've mentioned, we are made in the image of a Trinitarian God, and that means that we are rational creatures and we have the cognitive faculties to actually do science. Like that's something that we take for granted, but it's all because of the way we've been designed, and that we would not be able to do that otherwise. Oh, and there's a couple of passages that encourage us to do science. First of all, there's the fact that Jesus commanded us to love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. So we're not to be unthinking people. We're supposed to be thinking through, using our minds. But when I look at the book of Job, I'm especially encouraged by the questions that God asks of Job. He says, like in chapter 38, verse 33, and you know, Job has made objections throughout the book about, you know, asking God, why is this happening in my life? And essentially, God comes to him and just starts asking him all these questions to sort of give Job that perspective he needs, that God really is the sovereign king over everything. And he does this by asking some amazing questions. So like chapter 38, verse 33, he says, "Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth?" And so he's talking about, when he says the ordinances of the heavens, I think he's talking about the laws of the universe, these regularities that we know about today. And in the very next chapter, verse 1, he says, "Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the does? Can you number the months that they fulfill? And do you know the time when they give birth?" And it's interesting because it's almost like God is just extending this invitation to Job. Like, hey, go study my creation. Go study these creatures that I've made. Look at their gestation period. Look at the way they have their calves. Look at the expanse of the universe and consider all these regularities and laws that I put in place to keep things acting in a consistent manner so that you can actually do observational science. And I think that for those who would suppose that Christianity is anti-science, they just need to remember that it's one of the few, maybe the only religion out there that says all of this faith, the entire faith system, is testable, and it's dependent on the resurrection literally happening in history. And Paul says that in 1 Corinthians 15. He says if the resurrection is false, if Christ did not rise from the dead, then it's all moot. We might as well just pack up our things, go find something else to do, because the whole point is you can observe it, it's testable, you can look at events in history and see, did this really happen? Is this true? And he gives evidence. And that's part of the scientific method, is looking at evidence and saying, how did this come about? And I think just one final quote that I think is worth noting from John chapter 20. So after the whole gospel, where there's eyewitness testimony given to Jesus is doing miracle after miracle, and finally we have Jesus' death and then his resurrection itself. And Thomas is seeking evidence, and he doesn't want to believe that Jesus has actually risen from the dead. But Jesus presents himself, shows him the nail mark, shows him the his side where the spear was thrust. Thomas believes. And then John follows up that encounter with this statement. "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." And you get the sense that John is saying, I have been giving all this evidence so that you would know Christ, so that you would have life in his name. And even though we haven't literally seen what is described there, eyewitness testimony is a very powerful form of evidence. I mean, criminals are sentenced to life in prison because of eyewitness testimony. So it's not something we want to disregard. And it does fit into this whole conversation, because it says that Christianity is not opposed to the scientific method and the gathering of evidence to determine truth.
You've been listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time, and we hope and pray that these episodes help encourage and strengthen your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can hit us up on our social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. Feel free to check out our website for past episodes. And of course, we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.